It's the transportation industry that's growing both in land and sea and also now in air. And it's a dynamic industry. And 4 years ago, we had a Rotary presentation on drones. And 2 years ago, we had the Scan Eagle from In Situ over here. And that's the device they were using, fixed-wing aircraft in Iraq and Afghanistan. So our speaker today is Patrick Sherman. He's the founder of the Roswell Flight Test Center in uniform today to tell us about what's happening in the air. He's a fellow member of our AUVSI, that's Association for Unmanned Systems International, System Vehicles International. And Lori Brown is also a member of our group. She just left the board to become executive director, and she and Patrick Sherman worked together with her company called Brown
Unmanned
Aerial Solutions, where they help businesses figure out how to use drones productively. So she'll be here to kind of help support Patrick if he needs help. Patrick is an international recognized speaker in the drone community in the U.S. and abroad. He's been to the Sultanate of Oman and to China not too long ago to be a keynote speaker and a panel member. He has authored more than 100 articles in trade magazines. He operates a drone website. He has a background as a newspaper reporter, photographer, magazine editor, and he does strategic communications consulting. Holds degrees from University of Southern California, and an MBA from Willamette. And the challenge today, you guys know a guy named Roger sitting back there? He has a competitor here, because we're going to try to get finished by 30 minutes after the hour. Take it away, Patrick Sherman.
All right. Hello, everybody. Thank you. Glad to be here. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come out and speak to you. Now, based on the speakers you've had before, the first thing I'm going to tell you is the drones we're going to be talking about today are quite a bit smaller. And this is an example of one. We're going to be taking a look at drones at work, commercial applications for drones, beneficial uses drones can have in society. But before I do that, I want to tell you just a little bit about myself. Jake already pulled the pin on much of this, so that'll help me make up some of the 5 minutes that were taken off my time earlier. I've been flying drones since 2010. Back then you had to build your own. And I've always had a particular interest in public safety applications. I've worked for public safety agencies, and when I was a newspaper reporter, I had the privilege of reporting on them. So that consequently, that mission, and I think we all appreciate brave men and women who run towards things the rest of us are busy running away from. So I always thought this technology had great potential to benefit those people, and that's sort of been my North Star throughout this 8-year journey. Anyway, as he mentioned, I'm the author of more than 100 published drone articles in various magazines around the world, and I've had the opportunity to speak at events literally on the other side of the planet and right here throughout the United States. So anyway, that's enough about me. So with all this background, with all this I bring to bear, a natural question that people come up to me and ask are, what are the future commercial applications of drones? What are the positive, beneficial uses that we'll be seeing in the coming years and decades? And the answer I give people is always the same. I have no idea. And I'll tell you why that is with an example. Take Dubai, the United Arab Emirates. It's the seventh most active container port in the world, and it's been increasing 25% per year in business for the last 4 years. So this is an enormously complicated, busy port with a lot of activity going on. Now, one thing to be aware of is if you want to know about the future of drones, you shouldn't ask a drone guy. Because all we're interested in is the flying machine, the little thing buzzing around up in the air. That's what we want to know about. The problem is the best ideas for how drones can be used come from everybody else, because they know what problems need to be solved out there in the world. And one problem surfaced in Dubai. Turns out a big ship pulls up, offloads 50,000 white Toyota pickup trucks into a giant parking lot. So now you've got all these cars out there. How they would organize if you wanted one particular car with its vehicle identification number is you'd hand somebody a clipboard with that number on it, and you would send them out into the parking lot. And it took them, on average, 2 to 3 days to find the car that you wanted. This is not an efficient use of time or human power. So, this organization had an idea. Let's use drones to track this inventory aerially. So what they do is, as each truck rolls off the boat, they slap an RFID tag, a radio frequency ID tag on it, associate that with the VIN number for it, and then once a day, this drone you see here in this photograph flies over that parking lot, records the location of each vehicle, and loads it into a database. So now when you want to know where this particular VIN number is, it takes you about 30 seconds instead of 2 or 3 days. And here's the thing. I, as has been discussed, know a lot about drones. I've been working on drones for years. I've applied myself to it. Never would this have occurred to me, never in 1,000 years, because I was unaware of this problem. And so what I want to do with this presentation is sort of turn it around a little bit. It's not the drone people who know how to best use drones. It's all of you, because you know the problems out there in the world that need to be solved. So what I would like to do is brief you about some of the basic capabilities of drones and leave it to your imagination and insight to figure out how you can apply what they are capable of doing. And then together, we will forge a better, more efficient, and safer future. Whoops, wrong button, going backwards. All right, drones, in other words, everything you ever wanted to know but were afraid to ask. All right, we're going to cover 4 basic topics today. The first one is the fundamentals of these aircraft, how they operate, some of the safety issues that surround them, and some of the inherent hazards involved in using them. We're going to take a look at the sensors and payloads that they carry and the products that those can deliver for us. And then finally, we're going to look at the rules and regulations which cover their operations here in the United States. I'd ask you to hold your questions towards the end. I understand that you guys are let's say you monitor the clock with extreme prejudice. So I want to make sure I get through my whole presentation if I can, but I do think we'll have a little time left over for questions and answers. And then when we're all done, I will actually fly a drone back here in this corner, so we can certainly carry on the conversation then. All right. Drone fundamentals. Let's take a look at the power source, the flight characteristics, the onboard systems, and how we command and control them. Drones are powered, almost all drones, this is 99% true, drones are powered by electricity. They run on batteries. Other power systems are possible, but each come with inherent problems. There have been some people looking at using hydrogen fuel cells to power them. Those tend to be large, bulky, but probably the killer is extremely expensive. They also look at using gasoline-powered engines. The problem is that for a drone to fly, each of these 4 motors has to alter its rate of rotation 400 or more times per second. And that's much, much faster than a gas engine can ramp up and ramp down. Really, the only way to do that is for these to be electric motors hooked to an electronic speed controller that can quickly make those necessary changes. So if you're going to make a gas-powered drone, you have to run the gas-powered drone, make it turn a generator, turn that into electricity, have it flow into a battery, and then out to the electronic speed controllers and the motors. And the whole thing has to be light enough that it can fly. This is possible, but it's also a struggle. So consequently, we tend to use interchangeable lithium polymer batteries. The flight time of the typical drone, regardless of what it says on the box when you go to look at it in a store, is about 20 minutes. I've only ever seen one drone substantially exceed that, and it's actually back in the room today. It's the big black one actually flew for 28 minutes in my flight testing, which was frankly quite an achievement. I was impressed. What else do we know about them? They offer helicopter-like performance. That is, they land and take off vertically, and they can move in any direction. They can go forward, they can go backwards, they can go left, they can right, they can pivot in place. So they have complete freedom of movement. They have, almost always have an even number of propellers, and that is typically 4 or 6. And they're simple and very mechanically robust. This aircraft, if you discount the camera gimbal underneath, has four moving parts. They're the electric motors. We as a species have been building electric motors for over 100 years. We understand this technology really, really well. Therefore, this system will require very little maintenance and should operate with a very high degree of reliability for an extended period of time. A downside to this, what is called a multi-rotor configuration, conventional helicopters, we refer to as single rotors, even though they have a little tail rotor in the back, but just so now you're all insiders. A multi-rotor cannot glide or auto-rotate. If something does go wrong, this is coming out of the sky hard. So that's one downside to that configuration. And one reason why we haven't been flying these around as human passenger carrying aircraft. Some of the earliest manned aircraft back in the 20s were actually multi-rotors, but they were so complicated to fly that even the best pilots could only make them hover for a few feet for a few seconds before they had to land again. So this was kind of a dead end in terms of becoming aircraft we would fly, unlike the fixed-wing airplane and the conventional helicopter. Anyway. Now, the flight is controlled by an onboard computer. There's a little computer chip inside this guy. It actually very much resembles the one which is inside each of your cell phones. And then on top of that, it's got an array of sensors. It's got gyroscopes and accelerometers, which tell it how far it is leaning in one direction or the other, and how quickly it's making that maneuver, so it can find its center and auto-rotate. It's got a barometric altimeter, an air pressure sensor, which helps it determine how high or low it is in the air and hover in a single vertical position. It's got a GPS or a GNSS receiver. That is, it receives satellite signals from space to help it determine its position in the air and above the ground. It may have ultrasonic range finders, which are these large black dots right below the gimbal as you see it here. Those point at the ground, send out pulses, which come back to the aircraft and give it a detailed estimate of how high it is above the ground when it's at low altitude, below 10 feet. It also has an optical flow camera, which are the smaller black dots behind the gimbal here. And those work like an optical mouse on your computer. They look down at the ground while the drone is flying, try to pick up some pattern or signal, and those again at low altitude help the drone hover at a single fixed location or give it additional information when it's moving. And some, including this one, have binocular machine vision. This can actually see. That's these two little dots on these forward landing struts are camera lenses. And so if I flew it at that post right there, for example, it would actually refuse to hit it. It would recognize there was an object in front of it and stop itself, regardless of what inputs I gave it as a pilot. So it's a very sophisticated suite of tools and capabilities built in. And these things are getting better by the hour in terms of their technical capabilities. A truly impressive technology. All right, and then finally, drone operations are characterized by a feedback loop. I, as the pilot, standing on the ground, send out command and control using a radio transmitter with two sticks on it. So I tell it go forward, go backwards, ascend, descend, go left, go right, turn in a circle, whatever I want it to do for its particular mission. And then what the drone sends me back is typically video, that is to say, a live image of what this camera on the belly of the aircraft is seeing, and telemetry, which is data related to the aircraft's performance, the current charge of the battery, its altitude, its distance from home, how far away from me it is, and other information related to its flight performance. Now, the most important question that everybody always wants answered is, are drones spying on me? Yes, is what I'm hearing from the audience. Well, I have shown hundreds, quite possibly thousands of people a drone's point of view, and I've never had one come away saying, yes, you are spying on me. The thing about these cameras is they're very wide angle, they have a very wide field of view. So consequently, they're not very good at resolving an individual target, a person on the ground. I can see there's a person there, but I have to get sort of in your face before I could begin to identify you. If you're out walking around and you see a drone that looks about like that, size-wise, they know a person is there, but they have no idea that it's you. Technology will continue to change and advance. This will not change in the future. But today, I wouldn't worry too much about drones spying on you. Now, invite me back in a few years. We'll have this conversation again. All right, next, some of the safety and hazards associated with drones. There are a number of perils which come from using this technology, including the fact that the batteries they use are volatile, the possibility of propeller strike, the drone physically impacting a person or something in the environment, and interference with manned aircraft. Lithium polymer batteries, which those of us in the field refer to as LiPo batteries, are the highest energy density batteries currently produced. They're an offshoot of the lithium ion batteries, which are used in many consumer products like cell phones, like laptop computers, and indeed they were the batteries used in the Samsung Galaxy Note 7. And we all know how that turned out. So, these batteries are volatile. They're potentially dangerous. If you puncture one, it may well explode into flames. If you get it wet, there's a good chance it's going to explode into flames. If you stare really hard at one point on the housing, it may explode into flames. So consequently, these batteries always need to be treated with respect. And this is one downside to the technology. In another decade, we may beat this back by changing the fundamental battery chemistry. Like I said, these are lithium polymer batteries. Right now at a laboratory in the UK, they're working on what will be a lithium sulfur battery, which will carry three times as much charge and will be inert if punctured or damaged. So let's hope that technology comes along sooner rather than later. But for the meantime, know that these batteries are a potential source of danger. Second, even a small propeller turning at 5,000 RPM, which these propellers do, can cause some very gruesome images. Now, I should have given a little more thought when I was pulling up this PowerPoint to the fact we'd all had lunch. So before I turn over to this next slide, if you have a weak stomach, I'd encourage you maybe to look away. I just wouldn't want anything unfortunate to happen here. All right, fair warning? Okay. Propeller turning quickly, striking an object. Here we go. All right. This is a full-size manned aircraft, which another full-size manned aircraft came along beside and chopped to ribbons with its propeller. Now, this is a great example. I think you can all very clearly see the danger and the hazard this poses. This precise sort of injury is commonly inflicted by these propellers. I've seen people need multiple stitches. You get this very distinct chop, 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 chop. Because turning at 5,000 RPM, the cycle time for the neurons in your brain and your arm aren't fast enough to pull away before a single strike. So consequently, as you're pulling your arm away, you'll get multiple cuts, multiple lacerations laid down. So this is certainly a hazard for those of us who work in the industry, work closely with these machines. It can also be a hazard for people who happen to have the misfortune to interact with one if they're not expecting to. So always, if you see a drone flying, especially if it's flying low or coming in for a landing, give it a respectful berth. Any responsible operator should be aware of the danger and should establish a perimeter to keep the drone from interacting with somebody who it shouldn't be. But this is definitely another danger that all of us need to be aware of as this technology gets more widely adopted. And then regardless of whether or not it's a drone or a rock, being hit by a 5-pound object moving at 40 miles per hour has the possibility of ruining your whole day, or maybe even your whole life. So this is a big issue in drones, and one of the reasons the Federal Aviation Administration prohibits flying over crowds of people. Because it doesn't matter if it's a drone or a rock, if this falls on you from 200 feet, it's going to hurt. So we always need to be cognizant of that as drone operators, and be sure to operate in a way which is safe and acknowledges the fact that this cannot glide or auto-rotate, and therefore any problem which occurs will result in it crashing to the ground. And finally, the nightmare scenario has always been a collision with a manned aircraft. This photograph is of a jetliner. Obviously, it was in Lagos, Nigeria, I believe. And these sort of slash marks may look familiar to you here, like a propeller. And it happens where the plane was landing, it was flying over quarries where drones are used without authorization, but nonetheless very frequently, to take a look at how pit mining is progressing, et cetera, et cetera. Now, since the last time I gave this, we've actually had the nightmare scenario occur. A drone, which very closely resembles this one, a DJI Phantom, collided with an Army Black Hawk helicopter off the tip of Manhattan Island. The drone operator was a numbskull flying without permission in a restricted area that had been temporarily put in place by the Federal Aviation Administration. Totally the drone pilot's fault. The helicopter was able to land safely, thankfully, and it chopped off enough of the drone, and it got stuck in a rotor hub. They were able to find the serial number, and the FBI paid this person a visit. Still waiting to hear what's going to happen with that. But fortunately, as I said, the helicopter crew and the helicopter were fine. Now let's take a look at the sensors and payloads that these systems can carry. Visible light cameras, thermal imaging cameras, multispectral sensors, and LIDAR. And this is where I really encourage those of you who work in any other industry to put your thinking cap on, because whatever kind of sensor you might think, we can throw it on there. Now, a visible light camera, there's obviously a lot of variations, but they are almost universally mounted on a three-axis gimbal. That makes for a very stable image. They're capable of capturing, crash demonstration. They're capable of capturing 4K video or 12 megapixel or better stills. This aircraft, until about 20 seconds ago, would capture up to 20 megapixel stills. We'll be testing that. All right, obviously this is great for taking 3D pictures or for building 3D models of real world locations. Turns out if you take hundreds or thousands of photographs of an area from multiple angles, a computer can take and compile all those and make not only a two-dimensional map, but actually a three-dimensional model of space. You can take a look at a tear pile, say at a construction site, to determine the volume of material there, things like that. Like I said, here you guys are the experts more than me. Thermal imaging cameras. These see variations in temperature, not in color. They work equally well day or night. They obviously have a lot of applications in public safety, search and rescue, but can be used in things like industrial inspection, looking at, for example, the health of a solar farm, because faults in solar cells will show up as literal hotspots, and a drone with a thermal imaging camera can see those. This is an example taken from an exercise I participated in with the drone hovering over a single-story ranch dwelling, which was on fire. The darker colors represent the cooler areas, and the brighter color, you can see through the roof of the structure where the fire is burning. All right, multispectral imaging. This is typically used in farming, what's called precision agriculture, and applications like that. This is obviously a what we call a nadir view, which is to say looking straight down of a crop, specifically a vineyard, somewhere here in Oregon. I'm not exactly sure where. And just a normal thing. Now, I think everyone, unless we've got any agronomists in the room, we'll agree that this crop looks pretty healthy. It looks all green, et cetera, et cetera. However, if we take this visible light data and we compare and contrast it with what's called near-infrared data of the same thing, we suddenly get a more complete picture. And if you notice towards the bottom of the picture, there's more red and yellow and more green towards the top. This is giving us an estimate of plant health, which becomes visible up to 2 weeks before it's visible to the naked eye. So a farmer can fly a drone over a field, and 2 weeks before he or she could tell by looking at the leaves something was wrong, you can see it with this kind of sensor data. This has actually been in use since the Landsat program in the 1970s, but you had to wait for a Landsat to fly over your farm, for the data to get downloaded from the satellite, and of course it wasn't very precise. With drones, you can have your own data generated in a matter of hours after the flight, and you can have it down to the level of an individual plant. This technology has the potential to increase food yields by up to one-third. And on a hot and increasingly hungry planet, that could make all the difference. All right, and then finally, LIDAR, which is an acronym for light detection and ranging, the way radar is an acronym for radio detection and ranging. The idea here is you send out a laser beam strikes an object in the environment and bounces back. Do this enough, you can construct a 3D model of your environment. Do this from the belly of a drone, you can build a complex, very detailed 3D model of a large space, be it a forest, a shopping complex, something like that. And then finally, the rules and regulations which govern drone operations. Remote pilot and command, the certificate you need to fly commercially, the testing requirements, and the operational limitations. If you want to operate a drone commercially in the United States, you must be a certified remote pilot in command under Part 107 of the Federal Aviation Regulations. In order to achieve this, you're going to have to take a knowledge test at an FAA testing center located at most general aviation airports, and it is going to ask you questions on all of these subjects. And here's my favorite part. What part of this don't you understand? If you can read this, if this means something to you, you might be ready to take the test. If it doesn't, you're going to need to do a little bit of studying. It's a good, tough test. I think that most people without an aviation background are not going to be able to pass it. It is, however, to my the best of my knowledge, the only... Hey, we got an aviator here. It is, to my knowledge, the only aviation certificate in the world you can earn without ever touching the aircraft you intend to fly, which is, in my mind, sort of a peculiar thing. But we can only hope the regulations will get better as they go. And here are some of the limitations. The aircraft must weigh less than 55 pounds, cannot exceed a speed of over 100 miles per hour, must not exceed 400 feet above the ground, operate only during daylight, minimum of 3 miles of visibility, pilot has to be able to physically see the aircraft with their own eyes, so on and so forth. And this is almost all to prevent collisions with manned aircraft. All right, I'd like to close by thanking our sponsors, which include SOAR Oregon, which has recently been folded into the Oregon Department of Aviation, a thermal imaging camera maker FLIR, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, GoFrictional Cases, who make great cases for drones, including the ones I've got in the back of the room there, and Wendy Kellington at the Kellington Law Group, aviation and environmental lawyers. Bill, I believe I'm bringing the ship in right on time.
Unbelievable. Wonderful. Very well described. That was terrific. And
Patrick, thank you so much. In your honor, we're going to give a book to the library in your name. It's called The Handbook of Drone Photography. Thank you so much.